A former American president has never been indicted. Could that change? A grand jury in Manhattan has been weighing that question, considering a case brought against former President Trump by the Manhattan District Attorney. We're going to talk about the case itself, the significance and possible scenarios that could play out if the grand jury were to support that indictment, and get a reminder of the other known investigations into the former president, who's also a current candidate for president. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the case in Manhattan in particular? Do you think in that case the former president should be indicted, could be, why or why not? What do you see as the possible political impact of all of this? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's the author of the book Politainment, The 10 Rules of Contemporary Politics. David, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure to be here again.
Now let's dig into this Manhattan case. So this is the one involving payments made to the adult film star who performs under the name Stormy Daniels in the run-up to the 2016 election. Can you walk us through that case, the timeline, and why it could lead to an indictment?
Okay, so we don't have all the details at this point because the grand jury is still secret, you know, in terms of what's happening. But here's what we think we know is that Michael Cohen was an attorney representing Donald Trump. He appeared to have made some payments to Stormy Daniels back in 2016. And the purpose of it appeared to be to keep her from talking up. This was the allegation, to keep her from talking about an alleged affair or sexual relationship that she'd had with Donald Trump. Michael Cohen then sought reimbursement from Donald Trump for this payment. The whole case hinges on really sort of that connection there. Donald Trump is arguing and saying, I never authorized this. This was never for the purposes of paying her off. Additionally, what's alleged in this case here is that the payment to Stormy Daniels came not from Donald Trump's, let's say, personal bank account, but from his business. And then he tried to conceal that payment. And therefore, what we think is going on here, what we think is the primary legal issue, is whether or not under New York state law, Donald Trump personally authorized and was involved in the efforts to conceal a payment, basically a form of business fraud. Additionally, we think, but we don't know, there may be arguments here that tie into whether or not this is an illegal corporate contribution under New York state and perhaps under federal law. And the reason why I say we keep thinking is that grand jury proceedings are secret. You know, we don't know exactly what the legal theories are, but that's what we think it is. And we should also point out that the Manhattan borough, that's New York City, prosecutor has already secured a successful prosecution against the Trump organization for fraud already, for some fraud at this point. And so this is growing out of that investigation.
Now, this is a former president of the United States. These are actions that were taken prior to him being president, being prosecuted after he's president. A lot of concerns about possible investigations and indictments of President Trump stopped because he was the president at the time of the actions or the time of the investigations. Is the timeline pre the election, post his leaving office, is that important here?
It is important because dating back to the time when Richard Nixon was president, when there was questions regarding whether or not Richard Nixon could be indicted while still sitting as president because of the events growing out of Watergate, there was a grand jury proceeding that was not sure if the president could be indicted. They named him, the famous phrase, an unindicted co-conspirator. He resigned from office, possibly facing criminal indictment. And then Gerald Ford pardoned him, and therefore that resolved that issue. But while he was still president, the Justice Department had released a memo saying that a sitting president cannot be indicted because of a variety of constitutional issues, questions regarding, let us say, incapacitating the president to perform his duties. And that same argument was also argued at the time when Kenneth Starr was trying to impeach Bill Clinton back in the 1990s for committing perjury. What I'm getting at here is that there is a received opinion from the Justice Department that a sitting president cannot be indicted, but by universal agreement, when a president is no longer president, he's a private citizen and therefore could be indicted and subject to charges like anybody else. But what makes this so interesting now, and I was talking about this in my class yesterday, one of my law school class, is let's say he were to be indicted, that is Donald Trump, but the trial takes a while before we get to it. And let us say he gets elected president of the United States before he's actually had a trial. Could his re-election and being sworn in as president of the United States delay the trial? We don't have an answer to that question at this point. We're kind of off into a constitutional limbo land that we've never had to address before.
One other question. The former president predicted he was going to be arrested yesterday. That hasn't happened. The grand jury now hasn't met today. So we're not going to have an answer at least until tomorrow, possibly later. Supposing there were an indictment with a high profile case like this, would someone show up and, you know, arrest the former president, or are these kind of things negotiated? What happens?
Well, if it was just sort of most of us out here, it would probably be what the police would show up and they would arrest us, and that would be it. There would be no prior notice. But in the case of somebody like the president, and I hate to say this, that we oftentimes have a dual justice system or more affluent people, what would happen is that the prosecutor would call up, let's this case, Trump's attorney and say, we have a warrant for his arrest. Would your client voluntarily surrender? Can we work out a time, place, and so forth for it to happen? And that's what I suspect is going to happen in this situation too, if he were to be indicted. And so this is what I thought was interesting last week. When Trump sends the message out and says he's going to be arrested on Tuesday, my first thought was to say, did his attorneys get a call from the Manhattan Borough prosecutor? They didn't. And I suspect, given the fact that there's concerns about demonstrations, disturbance of the peace and so forth, I still think that's what's going to happen. There's going to be a notice given to his attorneys. It doesn't look like it's going to happen, I think, in the next few days, if it's going to happen at all. Because as you pointed out at the top of the story here, the grand jury didn't meet today. I don't know where they are, but my suspicion is it's just not going to happen this week if something is going to happen.
Talking to David Schultz from Hamline University and the University of Minnesota School of Law, looking at possible indictments of former President Donald Trump. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 about the Manhattan case or other investigations ongoing. Your thoughts, what do you want to see happen and not happen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. David, I'll ask you to take off your law hat and switch to your political science hat now. Members, Republican committee leaders in Congress put out a statement saying, hey, we want to talk to this Manhattan prosecutor. Can you talk a little bit about the political response to even the thought of a possible indictment of the former president here?
Well, it cuts in lots of different ways politically. Let's first think about what happened for the last few days, which I thought from a political perspective, at least short term, was brilliant for Donald Trump, who's always understood how to master the news cycle. You know, over the last few days, he basically has been the story. He's also been able to basically take the oxygen away from and media attention away from Ron DeSantis, his perhaps main challenger for the Republican nomination. And he's also been able to raise millions of dollars and get a lot of Republicans to rally to support him. So he has helped solidify the Republican base behind him by kind of portraying himself as what the persecuted, the politically persecuted Republican who's being gone after by a Democrat in Manhattan. Now, longer term, let us say we sketch this out further. Let's say he is indicted. I don't see how him appearing in an orange jumpsuit, you know, reference to what you know, if he were incarcerated or arraigned or something like that, or booked with his mugshot. I don't see how this helps him longer term with, let us say, independent voters, which he needs. I don't know if it plays well with the, let us say, more moderate Republicans, but it certainly, I think, solidifies his base. The other thing that I wonder here, and I'd be curious if any callers want to call in on this, given the nature of this case in Manhattan, which involves an adult, film star and so forth, I just wonder if there's a gender breakdown here. You know, will men and women view this case or view the facts of this case differently? I don't know if anybody wants to call in and sort of speculate on that, but I've been wondering about that, and I don't know what your thoughts are.
You can join in and share those thoughts at 800-642-1234 as we talk to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota, looking at the ongoing investigations into former President Donald Trump, including one for which Trump himself signaled he could be indicted for this week. That's the one in Manhattan, the hush money payments to a former adult film star. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your reactions, your questions. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about investigations into former President Donald Trump with David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. Let's go to your calls now. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. Well, I have a couple of things. As far as what David brought up, as far as Stormy Daniels, that could be private, like it would be with Monica Lewinsky and Clinton. But as far as the money fraud, that's another matter. Now, my questions are, if Trump would be elected again and that delays this case, what about the statute of limitations? And if Trump would try to leave the country, would Secret Service agents, as federal agents, be required to stop Trump from leaving?
Dennis, thanks for the call. On statute of limitations, David, I was reading up on this. As I understand it, technically, from 2016, the statute of limitations in New York would have wrapped up, except there's an exception if you've lived out of the state during that time. So Washington, D.C. and Florida, so the former president's back on the clock. What are your thoughts on that? And Dennis's other question.
Sure. So given the New York state law, which they put into effect, you know, a couple of years ago because of the pandemic, I'm guessing it would still toll or extend. What I mean by that is that they could probably still bring the case at a future point after he's no longer president of the United States, because it's been delayed because of why? He's not a resident of the state. Or if they've indicted him before president, they might very well at that point say, okay, there's an indictment. He's awaiting trial. Trial will be delayed until after he's no longer president of the United States. And remember, since he's already won one term, if he wins a second term, he would be precluded under the Constitution for running for a third term. The other issue is that it's very common for, especially, let's say, people who white collar criminals or people who are charged as white collar criminals to lift their passports to say that they can't travel. This raises a really interesting question here, is that we expect the president of the United States to travel, you know, to other countries to meet with diplomats. Like, is it today or tomorrow? Biden is going to be up in Canada, you know, meeting with, you know, Prime Minister Trudeau. So that is a really interesting question here, is that would they lift the president's passport and preclude him from leaving the country because we would consider him what? A risk of flight. Again, we don't know the answer to that question, but if it were anybody else, the answer would be yes, the passport would be lifted.
Thanks for that call. Yordis joins us now in Colfax. Yordis, hi.
Hi. I have a lot of questions, but the main one is his lawyer, his so-called fixer, went to prison for this crime for paying Stormy Daniels the $130,000. Now, how come no one ever talks about that? That's actually been proven in court, and he has served his time. And how does that relate to Trump? It should directly relate to Trump because.
Yordis, thanks for the call. Yordis referring to Michael Cohen, who I believe has been a frequent contributor to the grand jury so far, David.
No, this is actually a really good question here because the principal witness against Donald Trump, as far as we know, is Michael Cohen. Now, we don't know if there are any other records or documents at this point, but assuming it's Michael Cohen, I sketched out a scenario with my students yesterday that says, okay, so we go to trial, Michael Cohen, given his background, given the convictions and so forth, testifies. Let us say, for the sake of argument, Donald Trump testifies and says, I had nothing to do with this. Michael Cohen was on his own. The job of the jury is to assess competing credibilities and determine who they can trust. This is a really good question here. You know, who's the jury going to trust at this point? Or are they going to trust Donald Trump? Or are they going to trust Donald Cohen? And so your caller raises an incredibly important point here, is that the perhaps critical witness in this case is certainly not a model citizen, but is a convicted felon that has a lot of baggage attached to him.
And Yordis, I think making the case that because Michael Cohen was successfully prosecuted, now I didn't go to trial. He pled guilty, I think, before ending up in a trial.
I think
she's making the case that there's a precedent that should, in her opinion, I think, affect former President Trump.
Yes, I think that's absolutely correct there. Yes. And that could cut in the direction of saying that it provides the critical linkages. But at the same time, it could be that he is such a discredited witness that the linkage that you need to make from Stormy Daniels to Michael Cohen to Donald Trump gets broken at that point. So I think it cuts a couple of different ways. And this is going to be the job of the jurors, if it goes to a jury trial, if in fact he's indicted, to make that assessment.
Thanks a lot for that call, Yordis, at 800-642-1234. Linda joins us now in Milwaukee. Linda, hi.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, what did you want to bring up, Linda?
Well, I tell you, that woman is either a W or a P. I'll give you the first and a letter so you can fill in what words I mean. And I think I'm from New York, and we knew him back then in New York. You know, the trouble is really not even so much him. It's the people who back him and who think he's wonderful and can't do anything wrong. He could kill somebody in the middle of Times Square and they'd still cheer him on.
Linda, thanks for the call. David, Linda alluding to something that former President Trump had said himself. But, people can operate on the edges of the law but not necessarily cross the line into doing something illegal. Is it likely that former President Trump will evade, as Linda, I think, fears from the way she said that, will evade prosecution?
Again, it's possible he will, you know, but it's true. The benefit of the doubt goes to, you know, to citizens. Remember, we have a presumption of innocence, you know, until proven guilty. And until we've been proven to have crossed the line, even if we skirt right at the edges of that line between legality and criminality, as long as you stay on the legality line, I mean, you're okay. We may not like it. We may not like the ethical behavior, but certainly we have to give to Donald Trump also that same presumption, you know, of innocence. But she also raises another quick point I want to raise here is that, and again, I'm from New York also originally too. A lot of what's playing out here, I think also, is inside New York City politics. You know, there's a lot of personalities here that are New York. It's a Manhattan borough prosecutor. It's Donald Trump from New York, Michael Cohen, New York. There's a certain sense in which we're taking Manhattan parochial politics and putting it on the national stage. And that's for good or for bad, a little of what's going on here too.
Thanks a lot for that call. I want to take us outside of Manhattan in our last couple of minutes, David, and tour other investigations going on. We've got Georgia. What are you watching for there? This is in regard to a potential indictment for interfering with the outcome of the 2020 election.
Yeah, we know that the grand jury has already finished their deliberations. They have submitted a recommendation to the prosecutor. Prosecutor's deciding what to do. In fact, I think, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, one of the jurors kind of did like the 15 minutes of fame and on a speaking tour. So we know something's something's been released there or something's happened there. We don't know what, but we have two other investigations, at least at the national level, one of them with a special prosecutor surrounding the documents at the Mar-a-Lago regarding whether or not there's any type of violation of federal laws there. And then we have a recommendation from the January 6th committee over to Merrick Garland, the attorney general, surrounding the events of January 6th. And in that report, the January 6th report, there's at least a half a dozen recommendations regarding possible criminal prosecution or charges against Donald Trump. And then there still could very well be out there a criminal investigation or charges related to, again, federal charges regarding election interference in Georgia. So we have three or four others. And I should point out there, you know, collectively, all of these are felons and pretty significant. What I am suspecting is that if there's an indictment here in Manhattan, this might be the springboard for other indictments. And I say that because I don't think, no matter what people may think, whether they like or hate Donald Trump, it's going to be a sad day in American society to say that a former president of the United States has been indicted. This is just not good for us. But I think once the first indictment comes down, it's almost like breaking the dam, and you might see other indictments come from other jurisdictions.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks for navigating a lot of ifs for us today.
My pleasure, and thank you very much for having me again. And thanks to the listeners.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. We talked to him today about the case before a grand jury in Manhattan that's weighing whether to be the first to indict a former president and other investigations into Donald Trump. Keep following these stories at WPR.org. We'll have updates from our colleagues at NPR there as well.